Welcome to the Who and What She Wants podcast. I'm your host, Chloe Ward, and each week I will be interviewing an inspirational female entrepreneur so that you can take away actionable tools and insights to enable you to build the business of your dreams. Whether you're first starting out building your own business, or if you have entrepreneurial dreams that you don't know how to make a reality, then this podcast is for you. Now let's get into the episode. Hi guys, I just wanted to come on quickly before this episode begins, just to let you know that unfortunately there was some technical difficulty while recording this episode. I've tried my absolute hardest to edit the episode and to make it sound as good as possible, but there was only so much that could be done to save the audio, so I just wanted you to be mindful of that before you start listening to the episode. However, Crunch and I both agreed that we really wanted this episode to be published because we feel like the content is so valuable that you will still get a lot out of it, so I was really excited as well to share this, as I felt like the story that Crunch told was just so inspiring and I really wanted to share it with you guys. So please be mindful of the fact that the audio isn't to the quality that we would have both liked, but I really hope you enjoy the episode anyway. Today, I'm super excited to welcome the incredible Crunch to the show. This inspiring entrepreneur is a content creator for purpose-driven professionals. Today, we're going to deep dive into Crunch's entrepreneurial experience, and she is going to share with us how her background has helped to define the businesswoman she is today. For anyone wanting to up their content creation game, Crunch's story will help to inspire you to chase your dreams and to follow your passion. Welcome to the show, Crunch. I'm so pleased to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me here, Chloe. I'm excited.
I thought just to kick off the interview, it would be amazing if you could just give us some background to how your entrepreneurial journey got started and what experiences got you to where you are today.
Well, it's a bit of a funny story, I guess. I didn't actually start off wanting to be an entrepreneur. I don't think anybody actually, you know, as a kid, it's not a dream that many children have. Like, I want to be an entrepreneur. I kind of fell into it by accident when I was traveling. So I've been traveling kind of since 2013 when I, you know, graduated college and then decided I wanted to see what the world, had some savings and started traveling. And eventually, like, my money ran out, as these things happen, right? You're spending money when you're traveling. And even though I was living on quite a budget, like, eventually the money did run out. And at that point, I had to figure out if I would stop traveling or find a way to make money. And I just kind of grabbed an opportunity that came my way and pursued that. And what happened was actually someone I met in Costa Rica, who had been reading my travel blog that I was writing mainly for my friends and family, she reached out to me and she was like, "Hey, Crunch, I've been reading your blog and I like your style of writing. Would you be interested in writing podcast show notes for some clients that I have?" And I had never heard about podcasts or show notes, but I said, okay, why not? I'll give it a try. And from there, I kind of started learning more about the online business world and to learn more about, you know, how people run their businesses entirely online. And I was, you know, stunned and also like, well, I'm making some money, you know, writing podcast show notes. Maybe I could make this into a more sustainable lifestyle choice. And I started reaching out to people that I had connected with and asking them, like, would you be interested in me writing blog posts or articles for you? And someone took a chance on me and gave me my first kind of paid writing gig as a content writer. And since then, it's just been more clients and more, you know, just kind of getting myself established as a business owner and, you know, setting myself up to run this business while I continue traveling.
Oh, it sounds amazing. Where did your love for writing come from? Was that something you studied at college, university, or is that something that was just a passion for you?
I've always been interested in writing. I used to write poems when I was an angsty teenager, and I used to have like hundreds of notebooks and just writing all the time about everything. And I didn't go to university for that. I studied actually marketing and political science in university, But, you know, writing papers and stuff like that was a part of my university journey, although I didn't really study like content writing or, you know, writing in a literary format or anything like that. But it's just something that I've been really interested in. And, you know, I guess if you do it enough, you eventually get good at it. And even if you don't realize it, other people can recognize that you might be talented at it. And that's kind of that's kind of it.
I love that, though. And it's so great as well that you just followed something that you've always had an interest in and organically it then turned into a business. How did you feel when that person first approached you and said, hey, would you like to take part in this opportunity? Would you like to start writing these show notes? How did that feel for you?
Honestly, I was pretty stunned and shocked. And I was like, what? You think that I could write something that people would pay me to write? Because for me, writing had always just been something I'd done for myself. And if other people read it and enjoyed it, it was, you know, an additional bonus. I definitely wasn't thinking about writing as a way to make money or, you know, as a way to sustain my traveling or anything like that. So for me, for someone to say, like, we'll pay you to write something, it seemed a little bit strange for me. But at that point, I was just kind of like, okay, well, I need the money, so I will give it a shot. I don't see any harm in it. And, you know, that just became the path that I ended up walking. And here we are today.
Oh, it's so amazing. And I love sometimes how these opportunities just come up for us. And it's funny because oftentimes we get so kind of wrapped up in our own kind of limiting beliefs and things that we can't always see how great we are at something, and it takes someone else to shine a light on that and say, actually, like, you're super talented at this, like, we'd love to work with you. So I love that that happened for you, and I think it's so nice that your writing was validated in that way and you managed to then create a business off the back of it. Also as well, I love so much that you've got to travel as much as you have, and I think if I'm correct, you've traveled to over 50 countries while running your business, which is absolutely so inspiring. It's making me want to jump on a plane at the moment. What advice can you give to someone that also wants to travel while working? What is the reality of traveling and working actually like?
Okay, small correction. I've traveled to over 50 countries in my lifetime. I think I've covered maybe like 20 or 25. I don't know. I lose count of how many I've actually been to when I've been working online. But I think it's still a substantial number. And I think it's something that is gaining a lot of traction these days now that, especially because of COVID and the pandemic, when everybody transitioned into working remotely, I think more and more people started seeing the possibilities of their office being basically anywhere in the world that they wanted it to be. Right. So I think there's more interest in it. Unfortunately, I think it does take some sort of planning or intentionality about why you're doing this and how you're going to approach this, because I've also met some other, I think they call them digital nomads, you know, people who work remotely while traveling. I've met some of these people, and it's, to me, fairly sad and depressing how they tend to work basically their 9-to-5 job, but just from a different place, you know, like whether that's a hotel room or an Airbnb. And for me, that kind of defeats the purpose of traveling and working remotely at the same time, because they're not taking advantage of the fact that they're in a new place or a new country to explore their surroundings or to interact with the locals. What they've done is literally just uprooted themselves and moved to a new country and continued doing the same thing that they were doing back home. So I don't know, like, if you want to travel and work remotely, like, it is possible, but I would like people to be more intentional, I think, about how much you're working or how you are experiencing also the local culture and space that you are in, that you're occupying, and not just, you know, dedicating yourself to your work. Because if that's what you're going to do, then you might as well have just stayed at home.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, actually, because I think on social media at the moment, there's this kind of portrayal that you see these digital nomads and they post these glamorous pictures where they're eating this like incredible food that will be like floating on a tray in a pool. And you're like, oh my God, that looks amazing. Like, I want that lifestyle. But the reality is, behind the scenes, exactly what you've said. A lot of people are just kind of working, you know, 9 hour days, 10 hour days from in their hotel room. They're actually not going to see anything or explore anything. How have you overcome that yourself? How do you kind of structure your week at the moment in terms of how many hours do you work and how do you kind of structure your projects so that you can make sure that you're also making the most out of traveling and getting to see and explore the area that you're in?
So I think for me, it came a little bit more naturally, possibly because I started off traveling and started my business as a way to support my travel, rather than having a job and trying to fit travel into it. So for me, like traveling, my whole day was basically just, you know, going to museums or visiting a market or, you know, talking to locals and stuff like that. And then when I started working on projects for these clients that I started getting, I had to kind of like reduce the amount of travel related stuff that I used to do to kind of fit in my work, right? So I was still very conscious of the fact that I wanted to enjoy the place that I was in, and I wanted to eat amazing food and visit museums and see the sights and talk to local people and, you know, experience the culture. And the work was a means to an end to do that. So I was very conscious of the fact that, you know, I would not work more than 4 hours a day, so for example, or I would not, if I had to work an extra long day, I would take 2 days off after that to you know, enjoy myself and do the fun things that I really wanted to do, because for me that was my why, right? Like that's the whole reason why I started working online, was to continue traveling. So I wasn't ready to just kind of give up the traveling to dedicate myself to a full-time job. So as my business grew and I got more clients, I was very upfront about the fact that, hey, I travel all the time. I don't necessarily always have a good internet connection. So, you know, video calls, if you want to have a video call every day at 8 a.m., that's not going to be a possibility. I'm not going to be able to work with that. So I had these very clear boundaries about what I could and couldn't do. You could always expect that your work would be delivered on time or early, and it would be always of superb quality. But, you know, I'm not gonna get on video calls every week, or if that needs to happen, then there needs to be like additional flexibility that's worked into our contract. So I was very clear around setting my boundaries. And, you know, if the client said, like, no, I need somebody I can contact 24/7 on my mobile phone, then I would say, I'm sorry, we're not a good fit. So I was also not afraid to like turn down clients who I thought that would compromise my dream lifestyle that I had already created for myself. So I'm very fierce about protecting that for myself. And I think that's something that a lot of entrepreneurs, especially when you're first starting out, it can feel very stressful or very worrying to kind of reject people or set boundaries because you're so eager to sign the client and, you know, get that money into your bank account. But also you have to keep focused on the idea of what it is you're trying to achieve with this, right? So for me, that was traveling, and these boundaries helped me to stick to that.
No, I love that. And I think it's something that's so important. I know something that's kind of come out of COVID as a whole general topic is this idea of work-life balance. And I think the trouble is within cultures, a lot of us have just been programmed to dedicate so much of our time and energy to work, and we almost become a slave to our jobs. And it's like our work is like our number one priority, and everything else, even including our self-care and, you know, mental health, it all kind of falls underneath and below that, which is actually crazy. Because the thing is, if you're not coming from a place of integrity and if you're not looking after yourself first, you don't have the best of yourself to offer your clients and to offer your work. So I love so much that you've got such strong boundaries and you've got a real sense of who you are and what you want out of life. I think that's so healthy and so important. I'd love to know, in terms of setting the boundaries, was that something that you had intentionally figured out before you'd set up your business, or was it something that you figured your boundaries out as you went along and you had kind of like real life situations to react to?
That's a great question. I think for me, well, because I was coming from a place of traveling full time and trying to integrate work into that, I wasn't prepared to, you know, to get a 9 to 5 job or to get a job that would have so many requirements on my time. So right off the bat, I was like, even when the, you know, that first opportunity that my friend offered, like approached me to say, would you be interested in writing podcast show notes? I just off the bat said, like, do I need to be somewhere at some specific time? And she was like, no, it's super flexible. You just do it in your own time and submit it. And I have like other meetings that I have to attend. And she's like, in the 3 years I've worked here, we've had 3 meetings. You know, so I was like, okay, all of these are checking my boxes. Like, this sounds like something that I can make it work. You know, but ultimately, I don't think I realized how strong my boundaries were until I started talking to other business owners who unfortunately may not have such strong boundaries. And that was when I realized, like, oh, I hadn't even realized that I was so protective of my time, because it just came so naturally to me that this is what's important for me, and I will go to any lengths to protect it. And I think it might be the same for people who maybe have children, right? There are some things that are non-negotiable when it comes to your kids, right? You know, whether it's you have to send them to daycare or you have to pick them up from school at 3 p.m., right? These things are not negotiable. There's no way that you can not pick up your child, right? So I think it's just about getting clear on that and then just, you know, having a frank conversation with the other person on the other side to say, look, this is what I can and cannot do. And is that okay with you? And if that works for you, then yes, we are a good fit to work together. And if not, then there are millions of other people out there who offer similar services, and maybe one of them will be a better fit for you. And you just kind of wish them well and send them on their way.
Yeah. No, this is all so healthy. And I think it's even really good for me, Jack. So I'm a bit of a recovering people pleaser myself. And I feel like the way I set my business up, although I set it up with a good intention of being a bit more flexible and having a bit more freedom with my time, I've found myself actually that I've kind of built myself into a bit of a cage, and without meaning to, I'm pretty much working a 9-to-5 but for myself rather than for someone else, and it's something I'm now having to kind of unpick. So I've had to learn the hard way what happens when you don't set boundaries and you kind of follow along with what the client wants and let them lead. You end up then having to kind of unpick it all and go back, you know, go back and try and undo what the kind of terms you've set up. So I think it's so great that you've set that up from the offset and you've been so honest with your clients. Also as well, it sounds like you've just got such a great abundance mindset that you don't have fear of like scarcity of clients. You don't kind of sit there and think, oh, there's, you know, I've just said no to this, I'm not going to get anyone else. I think that's so healthy as well.
I think that might be an overstatement. I definitely do fall into the scarcity mindset sometimes, especially after I've said, no, I don't think we'd be a good fit to work together. And then I go and be like, oh my God, what have I done? I've just turned down $2,000. Like, where am I going to find this money? And, you know, I let myself ruminate for a bit. But then ultimately, like, if it's not a good fit for you, even if you say yes in that moment, you're going to regret it down the road, or you're going to resent them down the road. And when you bring that resentment and that regret into the working relationship, I don't think you're going to show up to your client in the way that you want to. And with, you know, with that joy that you bring to your work, and they can sense that. So, you know, I would much rather just let them go from the outset and trust that the universe will send me what's mine in due course. And of course, it doesn't hurt to help to have some sort of savings account that, you know, you can count on in cases that of lean times when you don't sign new clients, or when, you know, when COVID hits, for example, and you have to fall back on savings that you have. I think it's always a great idea to have like 3 to 6 months of business and life expenses stored away for, you know, situations that might come up in the future where you don't have new clients, or, you know, things go sideways with your health, for example. And that's always a great idea, you know, something I recommend for people to do, especially entrepreneurs who don't really have anybody else to kind of count on. I mean, maybe you have a partner or something, but ultimately in your business, it's basically just you as a solopreneur. Or if you have a team, you have even more reason to have that nest egg in case of slim times. And, you know, you need to support your team. You need to keep paying your team so that they will be there for you after the slim times are over, right? So,
yeah. Yeah, no, so glad you said that as well, because oftentimes people can be a bit cautious to mention anything to do with finances, even entrepreneurs, which is crazy to me, because obviously we have to send quotes and things and invoices to our clients to get paid. So it still baffles me how people can be so, just feel so uncomfortable talking about finances. But it's such an important point that it really helps to create that internal feeling of safety when you've got the 3 to 6 months saved, and you know that that's there to fall back on. Because, being completely transparent, it wasn't something that I had set up before I started my business. I kind of felt such a, I was in a bad place and just really wanted to get out of the job that I was in and knew that I needed to set up my own business. But I just was at such a low point that I'd rather have taken the risk and just was happy to take that risk personally. But I know it's something that really, in retrospect, I think it probably then did put quite a lot of pressure on me to start earning money quite quickly through my business, because I knew that if I didn't, I had no money, basically. And I know everyone's different. And I think it's also so important to recognize that people have different thresholds of kind of that feeling of safety. For some people, it might be having a month's savings. For some people, it might be a year, 6 months, 5 years. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think everyone's so different. But would you agree that it's important to kind of like recognize your own level of safety and your own level of comfort and kind of honor that?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right in seeing that different people have different levels or thresholds for what they consider to be safe. But also, I think sometimes we might get tricked in a sense, or your brain might trick you into staying comfortable just because it's telling you that it's not safe. And I've seen this happen with, you know, with friends who have, especially, so this comes up a lot whenever, like, we talk about my travels, and my friends are just like, oh, I don't think I could ever do what you do. And, you know, they come up with all these reasons that, you know, like, I don't have this amount saved, or I don't have this backup plan, or I don't have this and that done. All these things that they say in response to why they are not going out traveling, even though they say they want to. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, recognizing what is something that you need to be safe or to feel safe, and what is just your brain trying to keep you safe. You know, so you might have, let's say, 3 months savings in the bank, and you want to go out and do an adventure, and your brain's telling you, no, you need 6 months. But then what happens when you reach that 6 months worth of savings, and your brain says, no, now you need 1 year's worth of savings? And then from there, you go on to 1 year's worth of savings. Your brain says, no, you need 5 years worth of savings. Are you ever going to ever launch your venture? Probably not. At this point, you've just like fallen into the trap that your brain set for you. You need more and more and more to, you know, to be safe. But that's just really your brain telling you and trying to keep you safe from doing the thing that feels uncomfortable and scary, which, you know, with a lot of entrepreneurship, it is uncomfortable. It is scary to, I mean, put out your stuff on the world, like on the internet for the world to see. It's terrifying. It's, you know, putting your name and your face to the work that you're doing and claiming it as your own, with the fear that, you know, people are going to laugh at you, or people are going to, like, say, like, you're not very good at this. You know, like, all of those fears are real and valid. And we can move past them, we can recognize them, and we can also still take the action. So I think, you know, it's important to recognize how much you need for safety, like for actual safety. Like, 3 months or 6 months is a great amount. I don't know, obviously everybody's financial situation is different, but at some point you also have to recognize, like, okay, this is just my brain trying to keep me safe, and I'm just going to go ahead and do the thing, even though it feels really terrifying.
And it can just, it kind of links back to the notion of we all have limiting beliefs, and everyone's limiting beliefs can differ so much, but they really can just hold us back and actually end up forcing us into a bit of a cycle of procrastination, which means we never get anything done, and we're kind of sat there feeling really unhappy about our situation, but we're not taking the action because we're also really unhappy about the thought of having to take those scary, bold actions that feel uncomfortable. Is that, are there any limiting beliefs that you feel like you've really had to overcome on your journey as an entrepreneur?
Ooh, I feel like every day it's I wish somebody had told me this when, like, they offered me the first gig to, write podcast show notes back then, that entrepreneurship is really a mindset game more than anything else.
I couldn't agree more. Like, and it's just not spoken about. When you start, you're kind of just thinking, oh, well, all I'm really doing is just setting up a business, like the kind of companies I've worked for in the past. Like, you kind of just brush it under the rug and you act so casual about it. But you're so right. Like, it's like your business is a reflection of your mindset and your internal world.
Right. It's wild. Like every day I think like, okay, I've overcome this, but then it comes back in new and different ways, or like when you reach new and different levels in your business. And I think it was a business coach that I worked with once. They pointed out the fact that it may feel like you're coming back to the same mindset issues. But really what you're doing is you're growing. So the second time round, or the third time round, or the 25th time round that you're coming back to this idea that, oh no, I don't feel worthy, or oh no, I'm not deserving of money, or whatever it is your mindset blocks are, like you also have the knowledge and wisdom that you've picked up from all the other times that you've overcome this mindset block. And it really does come back over and over and over again. And I feel like it's just never ending. And that's also a sign that we are growing. So, if anybody out there is listening and feels really like your mindset is back in the same place that you were when you first started out for whatever reason, you're not alone and you aren't still growing. And, like these things affect us all. And I think the only way to do it is just to keep focusing on growth, like whether that's through working with a business coach or working or talking to your business bestie, or just journaling about it and getting those thoughts out of your head and out into the world. Because once you admit them, or once you recognize them, they're so much easier to overcome or resolve in some ways.
So true. And I think as well, I mean, some I'd love to know as well, is there anything that you do to kind of manage your mindset and to make sure that you keep that on track?
Personally, I found that journaling helps me a lot. I mean, since the cliche that as a writer, I turn to writing in my times of stress and need and needing to work through my mindset blocks. But I just start writing, and it's usually just like gibberish, like nonsense things that, like, I just brain dump all of my stuff onto a piece of paper. And once I can see it, I'm like, okay, this feels a little bit silly, like none of this is true. And I've also like found it kind of helpful to, after doing the brain dump, kind of go back and look at those statements. Like, so for example, if you're writing down whatever is bothering you, or what you're afraid of, like a fear dump when you are, for example, doing a new launch, right? I'm afraid that people will not buy my stuff. And, to kind of like follow that thought process, why are you afraid of that people won't buy your stuff? Like, I'm afraid that I won't make enough money, or I'm afraid that they don't like me. I'm afraid this means that, I'm not good at what I do, and that's why people don't want to buy. So like when you process through all of those things, you can look at it and see what is actually fact and what are things that you can control. And it kind of like gives you a little bit of that power back, so that you can do something about it, and the stuff that you can't, maybe you talk to a friend about, or you talk to your therapist about, like, why am I feeling unworthy of, charging this new price, for the work that people have told me is worth much more than this, right? And I don't know, everybody has different ways of processing. For me, this works, but I'm also open
Too. I love a
to.
good journal, especially if you've got a busy mind. I find the process of taking it out of your mind and just putting it on paper, exactly like you said, when you read over it, I almost laugh sometimes at some of the crap I write down. I'm like, what is going on in my head? Like, seriously, like, what is going on up there? It's crazy town. So I find it is definitely really cathartic and really therapeutic to do that. So thank you so much for sharing that as well. Just to kind of go in a slightly different direction with the conversation, I know people can often get super overwhelmed about having to create content for their business, especially if it's something that they don't feel comfortable with. It's not something they've had much experience doing. They know they need to do it in order to market themselves, but they kind of can, it's one of those classic situations that can often cause people to have those limiting beliefs we've spoken about and end up procrastinating and not doing anything. What advice would you give to someone that's struggling with their content creation?
Okay, this is a great question. And I do know like so many people struggle with content creation just because like as online entrepreneurs or business owners, like that's the main way that we get in touch with our ideal audience, and that's how we showcase our thought leadership, we showcase our expertise, we make sure that we show up in search results and all of that, right? And it's also a way for us to build relationships with the people who are maybe one day going to work with us down the road. But it can feel really overwhelming because there's a lot of messaging out there about like, oh, how you need to be on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn and Pinterest and TikTok and write a blog and put out a YouTube channel and have a podcast. And it does feel extremely overwhelming. So my advice for my clients who come to me and are like, "Crunch, I'm so overwhelmed. I don't know what I'm doing, or I don't know how to approach content." I think the first thing that anybody should do is to figure out like which platforms work for you that you enjoy being on, and which platforms kind of your ideal audience are hanging out on. And from those, you pick one or two that you will commit to showing up on a consistent basis, right? So whether that's Instagram, maybe you pick Instagram and LinkedIn to show up because you like Instagram for its fun and casual vibe, and you like LinkedIn because that's where some of your ideal audience is hanging. So you pick these two platforms and you get consistent. And when I say consistent, like something people often get confused or get confused about is consistency being confused for constantly. So when you say consistency, people think they have to constantly be posting on social media. And like there are marketing experts out there who, you know, recommend that you post 3 to 5 times a day on social media, or, you know, post something on your blog every single day. Like nobody has time for that. Like, let's just be real. Nobody has time to be on social media that much. Nobody has time to create that much content unless you are a mega corporation that has hired a team of content creators for you. Right. So, as someone who's doing this on your own, find a rhythm that works for you and stick to it, whether that's posting on social media twice a week. And, you know, that's, you think that's the most you can do. You think every morning, every Tuesday morning and Friday morning before you send the kids to school, you're going to have 15 minutes to write a post and post it. And you know that you can do it. Stick to that rhythm. Right. So, find a rhythm that works for you and stick to it consistently and show up every single time that you say that you're going to show up, whether that's once a week on your email newsletter, or once a month on your blog, or twice a week on social media. Whatever it is that you feel like you can do and do it sustainably, means not just for 2 weeks and then running after you get distracted and forget all about doing it, but something that you can really do for like 4 months, 6 months, a year, right? And so that's my first tip. Second tip is planning ahead. I have a content planning framework that I use and that I also teach to help people plan their content, because so often you sit in front of your Instagram page or like your LinkedIn profile and you're thinking like, well, what do I write about? And in that moment, it is so hard to write about or to share. And you know, because you can't think of something, you just like close it and say, okay, I'll do it later. And then later you don't do it, right? So having a plan and planning ahead is something that can really help with that. And also, the third tip is to batch your content creation. So set aside maybe 2 hours a week or 4 hours a month to just sit down, create all the content that you need for that week or that month or however much time you want to, you know, batch create for. So you just sit down and create like 6 social media posts, or you write 3 blog posts, or you, you know, do whatever number of pieces of content that you need to do. And it makes it so much more efficient because you're just there, your brain is just in that mode of, you know, not answering emails and also posting on Instagram and also thinking about a client proposal. You know, your brain is super focused on just creating content, and you get into that flow state, create that content pretty quick, and then you schedule it out, and then you don't have to worry about it. So those are my 3 biggest tips for people who get overwhelmed about having to create content consistently for your business. So
I can imagine everyone be like furiously writing down notes off the back of that, because there was so many golden nuggets there and so many great takeaways. So thank you so much for sharing those points. I know another area that people can often get really stuck with and can get really in a state of overwhelm about is how to price their services, particularly if they're starting out and they're offering a service-based business, or even if they're also offering a product-based business, they can get really overwhelmed with knowing how much is appropriate to charge for their product or service. What advice would you have for those people?
Well, honestly, I'm not an expert in pricing, and there are people out there who help, you know, business owners price their services and products. For me, it's honestly been quite a tricky kind of process of figuring out how to price my own services. But recently I learned from Lauren Roberts, who is a business coach for anti-capitalist entrepreneurs, I think is her niche, about this idea that if you look at your audience, you might have some people who have more time than money, and you might have some people who have more money than time, right? And the way that you approach serving these 2 groups of people is completely different, and the way you approach pricing your services for these people would also be different. So in this case, when you have people who have more time than money, they would be interested in DIY kind of services, you know, where it's a template, and you know, because it's, you do it once, you create it once, and you can sell it like 100 times or 1,000 times, you can price those fairly low. And then for stuff that requires your insight, your own personal one-to-one expertise, so to speak, those would be the kind of, the people who would be interested in those services would be the people who have more time than money, who are more willing to invest, or who have the resources to invest rather. And you know, you can charge a premium for that, because you know, you don't have to, you can afford to price those higher because your time is limited. You have a finite amount of time. So you have to be intentional about how you're going to split your time. And I think thinking about pricing in this manner kind of helps to give you perspective. If you are offering services, if you're doing done-for-you services, then yes, you should be charging a premium on that. And if you're doing like a template kind of situation where you're offering it to many people and many people can just buy it with beyond the initial investment of time that you're putting in creating that, you don't really have to do very much else, then you can price those a little bit lower. And for me at the moment, I'm offering offering my services on a sliding scale kind of pricing model, where people with less financial resources are supported by people with more financial resources. So, for example, my digital product are priced on a sliding scale. And if somebody contributes at a higher end of the sliding scale, that those funds go directly to supporting somebody who contributes towards the lower end of the sliding scale. So at the end of the day, like, it's a community effort that I get compensated for my effort into this product. And it is that the community is coming together to support each other, because we must recognize that everybody has different financial resources, and it's not fair to expect everybody to pay the same amount for a service that you're providing. Although it is important for you to be compensated for your time in a way that feels fair and sustainable. because if you are, you know, if you're working for pennies, you can't sustain yourself to continue offering that service, your services, right? So it's really complex, and I'm still in the process of figuring out what it looks like for me, and it's definitely going to change again in the future, I'm sure.
That's the beauty, though, isn't it, of having your own business? It can change, and it's nothing set in stone. Like, even if you're a business owner and you feel like you've set your prices already, you've been doing them for a year or two, but you're starting to feel like they're not reflective of how much value you're offering, there is always the opportunity to change them. You're not tied to them for life. And I think that is one of the beauties of having your own business. You're not tied to your income. You can easily increase or decrease it depending on, you know, where you're at, how much time you have to offer, how much energy you have to offer your business. Like, that is kind of reflective of how much you're putting in, you can get out. So I think that is one of the beauties of having your own business versus perhaps being on a salary where you are a little bit more fixed and there's only so much wiggle room you can have within a year period or within a 2 year period. The joy of having your own business is that you can change your prices and you can you know, increase your offerings and things like that. So I think that'd be great though for people listening. I feel like they'll have a lot to take away from that. So thank you so much for being so transparent and for sharing that. What would you say have been the best ways of marketing your business?
Personally, for my business, it has grown a lot, mainly through relationships and referrals. So most of my clients have come from word of mouth marketing. Like, you know, I have a client who refers me to another client who refers me to another client, or things like that. And really, it's just about making sure that everybody in your network knows who you are and what you're doing. And I think just because we know what we're doing and the services that we're offering doesn't necessarily mean that our network does. And it's really funny. The other day on Instagram, I posted a story asking, like, who here knows what I actually do? And I got all kinds of strange answers. And I talk about, like, the work that I do on Instagram all the time. And even then, people don't know what I do, you know? So it's just the nature of the world that we live in, that there is so much information. We are constantly bombarded by messages from brands and from people and from everything, everywhere. You're constantly consuming information. And people forget. They have a limited, like, capacity to process information that's not immediately relevant to them. So, you know, just taking the time once in a while to email everybody in your network and send them a genuine message to, you know, get to check in on them and to, you know, build that relationship, to nurture that relationship, and also to make sure that they know what you do, so that in the event that one day they do come across somebody who needs your services, they will be able to point them in your direction. So for me, it's been a lot of that. And also, recently, it's been more of showing up online. So about a year ago, a year and a half ago, I started working with a business coach who helped me realize that I can't just depend on my network forever, because there's much of my network. It's not humongous. It's finite, and eventually it will run dry. So I did need to keep expanding my network. And the way to do that was through marketing, right? To showing up on social media, to connecting with other people on there, and by producing valuable content that people like, that people find useful or informational or valuable in some way. And, you know, consistently doing that in a way that, you know, allows people to get to know you, to like you, to trust you, and eventually one day work with you, right? So that's been another part of my marketing strategy, and I found that it's worked, because I feel like some days I'm just putting up content and sharing all of this stuff and nobody's listening, but then suddenly it feels really sudden because they come to me out of the blue and are like, hey, I've been following your work for a while and I would love to work with you. And I'm like, I have no idea who you are. You have never liked any of my posts or left a single comment. But they're there, they're watching. Even if they don't interact, they are seen your stuff, and one day they may work with you, you know. So
yeah, definitely, I can completely relate to what you've said there, actually, because well, the first point of that, your network is such a great way, particularly when you're getting started. I mean, for me as well, like, I built my first kind of, my first few clients all came from my network, and even I'm still working with the majority of them to this day, and that's been for like 2.5 years now. And it's so funny, you don't realize how many people you have within your existing network that may be interested in your services. So it's so good to tap into that network. And actually, a lot of the guests that have come on the show have said the same. So I think that's really inspiring to a lot of people, because you don't, when you're starting out, I mean, I don't know if you agree with this, but you don't need, you know, 10,000 followers. You don't need all these things that you might think you need. You don't need an email database of 1,000 people. Like, you can get going with what you've got and build a successful business. And I think that's something that kind of needs to be dispelled, because it can put a lot of people off starting, because they think, oh, well, I've not got a social media following, I've got not got this, I've not got that. But actually, you can just get going with what you've got and be successful. And also, I love what you said there about showing up online and you just don't know who's watching in the background. I've had many similar experiences to you, in that I just will post content and then out of nowhere, I'll receive a message from someone going, hey, I've been following you, been watching you, I really like the way you're coming across, like, I'd love to have a chat, let's see if we can work together. And I'm like, oh my god, where have you come from? Like, what? It almost sometimes freaks me out, because I'm like, whoa, where has this person come from? Like, this feels like, I don't know, like some kind of divine intervention. It's quite magic when it happens. So I love that you said that as well. Just some great points that you've brought up. What would you say has been your proudest achievement as an entrepreneur to date?
I think I would say that it's been being able to continue traveling even as I build and grow my business. That has probably been my proudest achievement. And to say that I've had this business for a while now. I mean, I transitioned into this being my full-time source of income in 2018. So it's been 4 years, and I don't feel like I'm going to quit anytime soon. So I feel really proud of that, because, you know, the success rate or the failure rate of entrepreneurs is ridiculously high in the first couple of years. So that I've made it kind of this far has been, I'm very proud of the fact that I did that. Sometimes I can't even believe it myself. And I think for me also, I would like to say that I am proud of the fact that I have kind of got out of the mindset that more is better, because I feel like this is something that you might see a lot of in, especially in the online world, because that's probably where I hang out most. And I see a lot of messages of like, oh, how to have a six-figure launch, or, you know, build your business to 6 or 7 figures and beyond. And it's always about having more and more and more and growing your business to, I don't know, have 20 team members or $1 million in profit and that kind of stuff. And that has, I think, kind of never resonated for me. Like, I don't want to have money for the sake of having money. And I'm glad that I have been able to hold on to that belief that I don't necessarily need more money, or like a ridiculous amount of money. And I haven't kind of fallen prey to the idea that more is always better, because for me it's not. You know, like, if I'm working 40 hours a week and making, you know, $1 million, like, sure, that's great, but I would much rather be working 20 hours a week and having a lot more free time to, you know, enjoy what I'm doing and traveling and meeting people and that kind of stuff, right? So I don't know, like, I'm proud of that for myself. I know that's not something that a lot of people would agree with, or, you know, it's not something that a lot of people aspire to.
No, you're speaking to someone that I feel exactly the same as you, to be completely honest. I think at the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey, I did get sucked in a little bit to thinking, oh my God, I want to hit this target and that target. And I started doing it, to be honest. I did start hitting some of the targets I was setting. And I honestly, truthfully, I felt no better for it. I felt actually more stressed. I felt more frazzled. I had less time. I didn't feel fulfilled by it. So I had to have a real reality check with myself, and I had to turned down some opportunities because I decided that actually I didn't want to grow anymore at the moment. It didn't feel right for me, and I valued my time more than I valued having more money. So I think that's such a great thing to bring up, because we can often, I find as well, I don't know if you'd agree with this, but the kind of notion of hitting these financial targets is quite a masculine patriarch society kind of value system. Like, we've based so much on productivity and, you know, wealth and finances and all this stuff. But actually, for me, a more feminine way of working that kind of resonates and feels more in line with who I am at the core is that idea of actually respecting my time and respecting my freedom and honoring that and going with the flow a little bit more, rather than, you know, trapping myself and tying myself to hit these big targets and to, you know, do 40 hours of work a week. Like, it just doesn't resonate for me anymore. And it's been quite a journey kind of, you know, accepting that, because it can feel like you have to drop a lot of social conditioning to accept that, you know, grinding and hustling and all these things just aren't for you, when they're so, I don't know, glorified, I suppose, within society. Yeah. Sorry, I've got an absolute tangent there.
I absolutely agree, though. Like, I find that it's the same for me, that I don't know, this push to keep getting more and more and to, you know, get more profit and more productive and more efficient and more of all of these things just feels, I don't know, a little bit cancerous in a sense, you know. And for me, I was just going to say that it feels more aligned for me to find a spot or think about, like, how much is enough for me, you know, like, okay, maybe it's X amount of money in the bank or X amount of time to do such and such thing. Or, you know, when I have 30% that I can contribute to causes that I care about and, you know, still have enough that I am living a lifestyle that meets my needs and not just relentlessly pursuing, you know, a bigger house or a bigger car or a better, I don't know, flying in first class instead of an economy, you know. Just mindlessly doing these things. I mean, if these are the things that really make you happy, then go for it. But for me, these are not things that make me happy. I would not be happier in a bigger house than in a house that is full of my friends and family, you know. So for me, just the drive of more for the sake of more is a little bit yuck. And I would much rather just aspire to what feels enough for me to achieve my goals, live the lifestyle that I want, have the nest egg that I need, and, you know, that's enough. And anything beyond that is not necessary. I can, you know, direct my time and energy towards other endeavors, like taking more walks in the park or spending more time with my nieces or, you know, whatever it is that lights you up.
Yeah, I really hope this conversation acts as a permission slip for the woman that's been feeling guilty for not wanting to work hard and for not wanting to pursue that next big financial goal. Like, you're perfect as you are. Like, you're fine. That's totally okay to want that as well, you know. We're all entitled to want what we want and we shouldn't feel guilty for it. So hopefully this conversation will act as a real inspiration to someone listening. What would you say are your goals for the next 5 years? Where do you see your business going?
That's an interesting question. My business is not where I thought it would be 5 years ago, you know? So I think, like, my business for me, I look at it like kind of an experiment, kind of an adventure. I'm not really quite sure where it's going to take me. In terms of my goals, I would ideally like to get to a space where I can contribute like 30% of my profits to causes that I care about. Currently, it's about 10% that I put towards that, and I would like to raise it to 30% because I care about giving back to causes that are doing important work in the world. And I don't know, beyond that, I would love to be working towards or using my business in a way that helps to dismantle these systems of oppression that you mentioned, the patriarchy, capitalism, you know, racism, and all of these isms that are just keeping people stuck where they are and, you know, in all these places that are not wonderful, right? Like, I believe that we can create a better world for all. Like, if I can have any part to play in that, then that's in the direction that I want to go.
Oh, what a beautiful mission and what a beautiful why to keep you going. I absolutely love that. I thought I'd finish the interview with a question that I love to ask all of my guests that come on the show. So, what advice would you give to all of the incredible women out there who want to start their own business and have their own entrepreneurial goals, but they just don't know where to get started and they're a little bit afraid to kind of take the plunge and get going? What advice would you give to those women?
I think I would invite you to think about what would happen if you didn't do it, right? Like, it's scary, but what would happen if you didn't? Like, would you? There are so many things that you can achieve if you just took that step, and I sometimes feel that the fear of doing something may hold us back, but when you think about that, what lies on the other side of not pursuing that, I think that might give you that push that you need to to go and get started. Because I do believe that everybody has something beautiful and meaningful and valuable to offer the world, and you sometimes just need to go out and do it.
And what a great message to end the podcast interview on. Thank you so much, Crunch, for taking the time to chat with me today. I really enjoyed our conversation. I think you've said so many beautiful things that are really going to resonate with a lot of the listeners, and you've offered so much wisdom as well. So I think it will be a great episode for people to take a lot away and start implementing it within their own lives and within their own businesses. So thank you so much for your honesty and for your time. You can connect with Crunch via her website. I will obviously link that in the show notes below. And then I believe your Instagram handle is at crunchtini. Is that correct? TINI.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, you're so welcome, Crunch. Thank you so much for your time. And yeah, thank you so much for all the wisdom that you shared with us today.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode and want to keep up to date with the latest Who and What She Wants podcast episodes, then please follow our Instagram page, which is at the handle at Who and What She Wants podcast, or hit the subscribe button now. We hope to see you again soon.